And boom goes the dynamite. And boom goes the dynamite.
Good evening, and welcome to episode 26 of Boom Goes the Dynamite, the AEW Dynamite review show here on the Pro Wrestling Only Podcast Network. I'm Jeffrey. With me tonight is Chris and Lawrence. Chris, Lawrence, how y'all holding up, guys?
I'm somehow awake after all that.
You're not gonna fall asleep on us again, are you? you did last episode.
Wait, I did not fall asleep. Let's make this very clear.
You were almost there, though. Let's face it. I think we were.
I did not fall asleep. I almost fell asleep. There's a difference.
Listen, between Lawrence and I, we have been grinding these tulips and all of this hard work on Animal Crossing, trying to get our stonks up, and that takes work, that takes effort, and that makes you tired.
I waited goddamn 3 hours today to sell turnips for over 500 fucking bells each, so I don't want to hear it.
It's like we've got loans to pay, and Tom Nook he'll come to collect at some point, so better stay on top of your game for those of you out there playing Animal Crossing New Horizons.
I'm a degenerate capitalist, and I have to fuel my quench my thirst.
By, collecting beetles and fishing for fish and collecting clams and other shells near the seaside. But
well, thanks for tuning in to this episode of Boom Goes the Animal Crossing.
Yeah, exactly. We have an episode of Dynamite to cover, unfortunately.
Did anybody watch Dark? Because I didn't.
No, the only thing that I watched was the first 2 minutes of it for the first half of the TNT Championship bracket.
Yeah, and now, hold on. Yeah, I know something happened with Moxley, too, so I didn't find
Moxley
that out.
Moxley had a match on Dark. He won. He got attacked by Jake Hager afterward. Yeah, that was the biggest thing on that show.
Wow, a non-title match for Mr. Moxley, huh? Who did he squash?
Local guy, I believe.
Yeah. So, anyway, yeah. So we are live once again from Daly's Place in Jacksonville, Florida, for an empty arena show.
I don't think it's Daly's Place anymore.
Really?
It's some studio that they have, but it's not outdoors anymore. It's just a little studio area thing they have in the school.
I thought I saw a light hanging. So okay, so they're actually in a studio now, but I'm guessing they're still in Jacksonville somewhere.
That's what I figure. It has to be somewhere in the Jacksonville, that northern Florida area where the cons run stuff. So
yeah. Well, anyway, so your hosts to start off are Tony Schiavone and Cody Rhodes, JR, Excalibur, and Taz, all quarantined elsewhere. So they start off by announcing the other half of the bracket for this TNT title tournament. Before we get into the matchups, I just have to ask the biggest question about this tournament is, for God's sake, why?
I really don't know. This is kind of just a thrown together tournament for a title that I don't know if they had a real immediate plan for this, or it was just kind of like rushed to the forefront with everything that happened. But I don't know, man.
I mean, TV titles are fine and good. I mean, that's basically what this is. But I mean,
it does feel a little rushed.
And why now? My God, of all times, why now? Why are you holding a tournament now and declaring that the finish is going to be at a pay-per-view event that might not actually happen?
Show, yeah. Well, they might just have it happen. It's just in front of nobody in particular.
Yeah. I think we all know how well that's going over on the that a little south, further south in Florida. You know, about the center of the state there. I don't know, man. Jeez, oh Pete, this is turning existential because now we're just asking ourselves why. What is the point of all this?
I think that their logic was like, oh, we have some feuds we can like further here. That's really to me what it looked like.
I mean, yeah, I get that, but do we need a... I mean, and I'm sure this was on the cards to do a TV title of some kind. But yeah. Jesus, yeah. Now what? Right now, when you have a limited roster and you may not even be able to hold your final when and where you want to, because we've already canceled one big, you know, one big event.
Yeah.
As it is. I mean, you notice there was absolutely no mention of Blood and Guts that I heard, anyway.
They mentioned it a little bit. But
yeah, they just haven't mentioned a date, of course, because, yeah. It's just one of those circumstances, again, unfortunately, where they still want to keep, like, the crowd engaged accordingly in terms of what they're doing with their television. But at the same time, it does feel that rushing an entirely new title when, you know, the entirety of your roster isn't available to do a tournament style with it seems a little too jumping the gun. But then again, it could also just be considered by their on their perspective like a damned if you do, damned if you don't situation. So
yeah,
we'll wait and see how it plays out.
I get that, but are they really trying to? I mean, we're seeing reports now that WWE may not even be running their events in April, which, hey, good, because they maybe shouldn't have been running them in the month of March either. But, you know, but yet here we are. Now, on that note, I have to ask a question. I think I asked it in the group chat, but I'm going to ask it here again, you know, in public. Has WWE, because I don't watch their programming at all and pay no attention to what they're doing, have they been acting like COVID-19 is not even happening, or are they actually acknowledging COVID-19 exists?
As far as I can tell, in terms of the programming, they're still trying to act like it's business as usual, and anything regarding COVID-19 might have been mentioned on commercials or any sort of like PR statements, but I don't think it's been mentioned on TV land. For anyone who knows a little bit more about that and who's been watching their programming more often than we are, just send us a tweet over at Strong Style Story without the E in Style, Brazilian Fury with an S instead of a Z on Brazilian, or LOB_Gree, and just let us know.
With a silent Q in there, yes. So anyway, so let's go down. So the brackets for this TV title tournament that we don't even know why is happening. The first match announced was Cody Rhodes and Sean Spears. Because All Out just wasn't enough for that.
Good God.
Why, God? Why?
Yeah, more about them later. Another match announced was Darby Allin and Sammy Guevara, which, okay, yeah, they've been...
Admittedly, it should be the finals of this tournament, in my personal opinion, but, you know.
Yeah, but, you know, I think once we get to the other bracket, I think we know where that this is going to go. The next bracket was Kip Sabian versus Dustin Rhodes. Which, that just seems random as fuck.
Yeah.
That is a match.
it definitely is a match, yes.
It should be decent, and Dustin might be able to kind of elevate Kip a little bit out of it as well, but it's, I don't know, there's more people on the roster that you could have made an argument for. Hell, people were calling for, like, well, where's Orange Cassidy in this tournament when he's, like, the most over guy you have in the company? And I'm like,
right.
Yeah, you have a point. Where is Orange Cassidy?
But on that note, the final match announced was Lance Archer versus Colt Cabana. Which, that
could be fun.
I mean, that'll be decent. You know,
if Colt puts his working boots on, that actually could be a pretty darn good match.
Yeah, I agree too. But you know what? Damn it, it just doesn't seem right. Colt Cabana and Lance Archer going up against each other without Minoru Suzuki and Toriano being there too. You know, just doesn't
it's
seem
an
right.
It's an odd world without that those parallels there. Just.
So anyway, enough about that. Those matches are starting next episode of Dynamite. Not necessarily next week, but next episode of Dynamite. The first match of the evening, Kenny Omega versus Trent Beretta, not for the AAA Mega Campeonato, And not for anything else. It was just a 20-minute time limit TV match. This match was actually really, really good.
A very, very good match. We've always known Trent can go in these sorts of situations, and I'm glad that he got to show a lot of that by nearly taking Kenny to the 20-minute limit portion of the fence there. Unfortunately, the ending, sadly predictable because, well, executive vice president's reasons, et cetera, but just... Overall, though, Trent with a great showing on his end of things there. Definitely had some spots where came very close to, you know, getting the win and things of the sort. So, ideally, more Trent single stuff down the line. That would be nice.
All I'm going to say is there was absolutely no reason why this could not have actually been the 20-minute draw in a bid to elevate Trent Beretta a little bit.
Yeah, that would have been fun to see, for sure. And especially because they could have done... Especially at this time where you're still having to deal with the virus and you have to kind of work things into TV. Yeah, why not work a Mega Campeonato match out of it by having Trent go the distance on a time limit and then 2 weeks from now, like, have them open the show again, except well, no, for the Campeonato.
Well, not only around, that, actually. I mean, we don't even have to go that far. Why not have, you know, do the 20-minute draw or, God forbid, Trent get the shock win and then that sets up an AEW tag title match.
Yeah, because it wouldn't be the first time in which Trent has gotten shock wins of this kind either. We've seen it quite a few weeks ago in an episode of this very show that we've seen.
Well, how about when he shock pinned Kenny in New Japan and set up that IWGP US title match?
Yes, that's another good example of that as well. So they
could have
play into it a little bit more.
They could have gone that way, but no. Yeah, but regardless, this was definitely the match of the night, and of course they started off with it.
Mm-hmm.
So,
hey, good to keep everybody engaged from the get go, but then got to follow up on that, and
there were
some good things that followed up, but getting to those as we go through here because
So immediately following that, we had a video recap of Matt Hardy and Chris Jericho's encounter to end last week's show, and you know what? It did not get any better watching it the second time.
And then after that, at the very least, we did hype somebody up, in which is the current number one contender to the AEW Women's Championship in Hikaru Shida, and then we followed it immediately to the ringside area in which Shida had a match against, I'm assuming, another local to whichever area they're filming there.
They said she was from Georgia, which, you know, is really close to Jacksonville. So,
mm-hmm.
But Hikaru Shida versus Anna Jay match too. By the way, can we point out that they actually populated, they actually put people at ringside again?
Yes.
To make noise. So that kind of helped a little bit this episode.
I heard from, like, last week's episode that they just did not do that, and that sounds, between that and Cody's commentating, just sounds like a literal nightmare that I would not want to sit through, which...
Lawrence, you've been kind of silent on this point so far. Do you think that the crowd helped a little bit this episode?
I mean, I guess as much as it could help, which isn't a lot. Also... This match to me is so weird. Why was this girl getting so much offense on Hikaru Shida?
Yeah, for what really should have just been a squash again. AEW has this problem with their squash matches, which is they're not really squash matches.
Why is this girl going 50-50 with her? Mm-hmm. I mean, like, I don't get it. I've noticed that too.
Mm-hmm.
It's one thing if you built this girl up a little bit and like built her up as like a legitimate threat, but like you bring her in her blind and then like she's like going 50-50 with Shida. I'm like, what? I don't understand that like logic at all. It just doesn't.
The weird part is that this isn't the first time I've seen that with Shida matches, because I remember from a couple weeks ago when I did go to Dynamite Live over in Denver and they were filming the Dark episodes, and Shida had a match against one of the locals over here as well too, and that match was pretty much kind of a 50-50 with Shida playing off of like that girl's antics and everything. So I'm not sure whether that's Shida's decision where she wants to kind of elevate her opponents even just a little bit, or whether that's
the company going, hey. Which is fine if that's the case.
Yeah.
She should be a little more selfish, I think. I think she's too nice if that's the case, because I don't know. To me, it's just like, I don't know, just like look dominant.
I get where you're coming from, Lauren, especially considering that the whole story is that she is the number one contender and she's getting ready for Nyla whenever that match ends up happening. So definitely get where you're coming from with that. But for a positive in this match, she did the deal and it got done. Nobody kicks out of the Falcon Arrow.
That's right. Nobody does.
And Excalibur couldn't be there to call it, which is just the saddest part of this.
Well, they did that earlier too, because they gave the people what they wanted too, and Excalibur couldn't call that. Two other notes I have on this match. Number one, I think they forgot to cut away again, like they did last week, Lawrence.
Yeah.
I think they forgot to cut away again.
It was really weird. So another weird like pause there. Yeah, I remember this.
Yeah, because they're just bullshitting and talking about, you know, Britt trying to threaten Hikaru Shida with a while eating a sandwich, and then two, can we talk about All Elite Wrestling doing an autism inclusion promotion, not with Autism Speak? So that gets the big hand clap for me, because Autism Speaks is frankly an evil organization.
In my humble opinion. I've heard horror stories as well, and I think Brandy has been spearheading this one with these guys for quite some time. I think even dating back to, I want to say it was Double or Nothing, when they did the the sensory rooms, I think is what it was, the first event in which they've done that sort of inclusion. So it seems like it's been a partnership they've been working on for a while now, and I'm glad to see it, you know, bearing fruit and doing good things. So
And by the way, on behalf of, you know, I my views do not necessarily represent the views of the Pro Wrestling Only Podcast Network, but you know what? Fuck Autism Speaks. They can kiss my ass. Anyway, we go to commercial, we come back, and we have a recap of Jon Moxley versus Jake Hager. And Jesus Christ, why? Again, why?
I glazed over like 99% of this, so
the way I see it is just basically a good V1 defense for Moxley that just involves the Inner Circle guys being involved with him somehow, which is still a loose enough story thread that they can follow on. And I'm like, okay, cool, let's move him on.
Now that the whole MJF thing seems to have screeched to a halt because of the world situation.
You know what though? It's like, where has he been?
Quarantined. I'm glad for it.
He had to have been quarantined because...
I guess so.
From an in-character perspective, too, he'd be that one person who would say, I'm not, you know, being around poor people and catching the corona out of it.
Yeah.
And probably say something really racist in the process of it, like the dipshit that he is. So...
Damn. I don't think he's gone that far yet. He said some stupid shit, but I don't think he's gone to the racism
yet.
There is. So our third match of the evening, poor Marco Stunt gets fed to the now debuting Lance Archer. But before that, we get another video promo from Jake Roberts, and these are starting to get much more rambly as time goes on.
Just one of the circumstances where I think they're still trying to figure this whole dynamic out, which, hey, once you do it, cool, but it's definitely feeling a little too preachy kind of thing at this point.
Well, I mean, he did work a preacher gimmick for a while, as I recall, that led to the whole Austin 316 promo.
Right, yes.
So,
just one of those things, but at the very least, getting Lance Archer in the ring to do Lance Archer things was the best way of going about this, and Marco Stunt was a perfect opponent for that because,
But even then, he got...
Rip in pieces, Marco.
Even then, he got too much offense, I thought.
I do agree with that. I like the idea of Marco kind of like struggling and kicking out of stuff and things like that, but just have Lance murder him. Literally, that is what he's here for. He's here to run through people.
Yeah, have Lance murder him, set up a future match with Luchasaurus.
Yep. Step, big money, baby.
Step three, big question money. Mark, question mark, question mark. Step four, step profit. Four,
profit.
So,
gotta love internet memes.
Even your dog agrees with this.
Yep.
Now, at this point, I actually had a rather important phone call I needed to take, so I had the TV on mute, but I did see what was going on. But, Chris, you may have to take the lead, but I do know that after this, we got another video of the Dark Order with Brody Lee.
Yes, and it was just basically him yelling at one of his guys for yawning during one of his presentations and for not calling him Mr. Brody. Just basically vignettes poking fun at Vincent Kennedy McMahon and his, you know, zany, quirky, insane shit, which, you know, take the shots you want to take, I guess.
Was this always where the Dark Order thing was supposed to go, or do you think they just kind of folded that in once Brody Lee became available?
I believe that's part of it. It's just they had somewhat of an idea with a higher figure that's abusive to his employees kind of thing in mind. But then just the McMahon-isms, I think, were just a late-stage addition to it, which, you know, it can surface.
Get the fuck rid of it now. Kill it dead now before it gets worse. This is garbage. This is absolute trash and an absolute fucking waste of Brody Lee. I'm going to say it right now.
Which part of it? The McMahon parody or just the whole Exalted one?
Honestly, just everything. This is just bad. I'm sorry, but those segments just, it didn't feel like naturally coming to him at all. Am I wrong here, or did it feel very forced?
Well, I'm almost wondering if it's a situation where this is like they're letting him get rid of like this dumb shit now that they know they're not on TV, that they're not with crowds. I mean, before basically just letting them do whatever it is that they want to do with it, or if Brody pitched the idea, it's odd. I will give you that in terms of it. I think for the material, it could be worse for what was given, but I could also see, as Lawrence is pointing, just how old, very old and very quickly this probably ends up becoming.
Don't go down the road TNA went. This is my thing is, do not go down that road.
Well, let's not forget that WWF in their day, you know, had their own period of doing this too against Ted Turner.
Oh, well, I know that, Jeff, right. But two wrongs don't make a right.
No, I'm not saying that. No, the point was that it never works out well.
And it was bad when they did it, too. Trust me.
Oh, yes, it was.
Oh, it was garbage. And it's never good. It always looks desperate. You know, for all of them saying all the time, oh, you know, we're not, like, directly competing with them, and oh, we're not, you know, you're focused on them that much. You know, they sure awfully, like, you'll mention
take
it.
Their shots.
You know, and it's like, it makes you think. I mean, you know, my friend Mike and I were talking about this, and it's like, you know, like I said, it didn't work out for. Remember the Voodoo Kin Mafia and TNA?
Oh, God.
That was not good.
Lawrence, why?
Remember that?
I was trying to repress that.
Yeah. And that's my point exactly, because not a lot of people do either, because it was trash. And nobody remembers it, and nobody wants to remember it because it was just garbage, hash slinging bull. And this
I see your point. Yeah.
And to me, this is what this is, and it's like, it's obvious what they're trying to do here, and it's obvious what they're trying to portray. And I think just Brody Lee is just worth so much more than this. I just feel like he's worth so much more than this shit gimmick, this shit like. A character. I don't know. I don't like it. I think it's just, they should have just let him be his own person.
My question specifically at this point is more of like, was it something that this is like his thing, his own suggestion to do this, or is somebody else basically coming up with it? That's the biggest thing I'm curious about. Yeah.
If it was his idea, it's a stupid one, mm-hmm. and he shouldn't do it. what are you gonna do?
Well, I mean, if you got an axe to grind, you got an axe to grind. So you know.
Yeah, I know. I don't know. It doesn't really sit right with me. I just think he could be doing so much better than that.
Well, you know, I do think that to a certain extent, AEW does need to get past this taking shots at other companies thing. Because, I mean, they haven't done it lately that I'm aware of, but, I mean, even the...
We know what they did a little while back. We discussed it at length here.
Yeah, we did, yeah, for reasons. But even then, I mean, even, you know, going back to Double or Nothing last year with the whole shtick with... the destroying the Triple H throne.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like this was needless. You know,
yeah. I guess the point is, yes, it does make them feel far more petty and just beneath the competition that they're saying. It just
right.
Focus on the shit that you can do with your own people and just.
Like, you know, as with so many things, the New World Order thing really crossed a line that never can be uncrossed, and now it feels like everybody has to do
shots
at the other company now, you know?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No, you're 100% right about that, Jeff. I think, unfortunately, just everybody's just living in that, like, that bubble. No.
Well, yeah, pro wrestling in America really has never gotten over the 90s, the late 90s. It never has.
It sadly shows, too, at this point, because you have Cody Rhodes doing his best 90s WCW cosplay from the way he commentates, with the way stories are going. There's a particular spot in the main event that I will... point out accordingly once we get to it and just...
Yeah, it's actually, like, it almost makes me a little, like, uncomfortable in a way. It's just how much he... I subtle, like, little nods to, like, you know, the past, but, man, it's like he beats you over the head with...
Yeah.
Right. I mean, last week the whole thing with there's no match in there. Hey, remember how awesome Bill Watts was? Yeah, you know.
It's like that,
you know. But at the same time, again, I mean, we could say this again. Pro wrestling in America really, really has never gotten over that era. It never has. I mean, I think it took that era to get over Hulkamania and that run. But now nothing's happened to where we can get over, you know, the NWO and everything that happened after it, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, it's in the way that, you know, it's in the way heel stable dynamics is the NWO, you know, not the Horsemen. It's clearly the New World Order, you know, no matter what. You know, we're taking over everything, you know?
Yep.
You know, it's, you know, that was part of the reason why we all thought at the time and still do think that Los Ingobernables, no matter which promotion that they're actually in, was a little different because that wasn't their shtick.
Right. It's not. Yeah.
they were we wanted to be the heroes. You rejected us. So fuck y'all.
Yeah.
That was their shtick. You know, nobody does that. That's a more realistic heel stable dynamic than we're gonna hold every belt and rule and run roughshod over everybody for years ad nauseum, and there's never any, you know, payback, you know.
It's yeah, and I think we could do an entire podcast in terms of like face heel schematics. I feel in terms of pro wrestling now compared to, you know, the 90s and just how much of the same we've been kind of seeing in the process. But
right. Well, I mean, at the same time,
unfortunately, we have the show still.
Yeah. Well, I mean, we've also noted at length how the heel face dynamics in AEW is completely wacky world at best sometimes. But anyway, we are going on a tangent. The only thing I'm going to say is that, number one, nostalgia is a motherfucker. Number two, hold that thought for the end of the show because of an announcement we have to make.
Mm-hmm, certainly.
Ironically. Anyway, I was still on this phone call when Match 4 came up, but I do know it was Dark Order's number 8 and 9 against the debut on Dynamite of, what are the Natural Nightmares?
Yes.
Dustin Rhodes and QT Marshall. So, Chris, take it away.
I'll say this. If you're going to use random jobbers for Dark Order members just so they can get squashed by, you know, I guess developing tag teams or single guys, yeah, fair enough, because you're still showing the whole cult aspect and people wanting to join them even if they're just being classified as numbers. Cult getting a little cheeky there during commentary as well, too, when they brought up the other Dark Order members like Evo Uno and then Stu Grayson, and then Colt coming up with I believe he's Dos, I think was the comment exactly on that. And I'm just like, oh, I see what you did there. But dick move, Colt. Dick move. Even though I like you in the commentary 10 times better than I did Cody.
So,
eventually the match does get ended with a Dominator sliding Ace Crusher combination from the Natural Nightmares guys. Brody Lee comes out at that point, stares down Dustin for a second, gets in the ring, power bombs one of his own guys, and then just walks off. And commentary is basically putting over how he's not putting up with this sort of like performance from his people, which, action speaking louder than words, is a good thing. So, yay. We go from that. After the commercial, did you come back for the other video package that they played, Jeff, or were you still on the call during that time?
I was still on the call on this. I saw what was going on, but...
All right, so this next thing, probably outside of the Kenny Trent match, was my favorite just for the sheer cappiness of it, in which it's Chris Jericho in his hot tub, sipping a little bit of the bubble, and by that we mean pouring it into a glass and then just drinking out of the bottle because... reasons, and telling us that, you know, today is a holiday, with April Fool's Day, basically saying that just like how we celebrate the Good Doctor on Dr. Martin Luther King Jr.'s Day, and how we celebrate Veterans Day with the men and women in service, April Fool's Day, we're celebrating the elite because they're the biggest fools in the entire company. He starts basically running down the entire elite side of defense on the team. I believe Kenny Omega gets called a pumpkin head dipshit in this episode. And he's just going through pretty much everybody involved as Vanguard 1 is flying into where Jericho's residence is. Eventually, Jericho notices it and goes, Vanguard 1, I knew you'd come. He gets out of the hot tub, and he's wearing leather pants, by the way, just as a heads up.
Like, oh, no. Oh, no.
Literally wearing leather pants in the process of it. So he's trying to talk to Vanguard 1 and trying to recruit the drone into the inner circle. He has, like, a little Vanguard size, like a drone-sized t-shirt that he hangs onto the drone trying to make a deal with it. Vanguard 1 then immediately flies away, refusing the offer, leading to Jericho just being super pissed, telling it to come back here, and then he just goes, release the hounds! And then suddenly, five different dogs start running out God. In the yard, chasing after the drone. No. The best bit is when they cut to, because there's six dogs in total, one of them being a small little chihuahua who's just standing on the porch, just observing the entire thing as it's happening, and I'm just like...
Oh my God.
Chris Jericho can do no wrong. Jesus Christ.
Well, actually, no, he can do wrong, but I mean, as we've discussed, in
the AWTV, yes. Let's not talk about his questionable choices for podcast hosts because we would be here a while doing that.
I do have a question, Chris. Rumor has it that you actually purchased a bottle of a little bit of the bubble some time ago, and we never got a review of it, so. Review this shit,
yes,
motherfucker.
That's still on the way to me here. I've got another week of waiting on that.
Oh,
I had to
switch
debit cards initially when I did try to purchase it initially, but my debit card had gotten to like its expiration date, so had to wait on a new one, did the order, so now at this point I'm just waiting for it to ship to me. Rest assured, the moment I get it, there will be a tasting and there will be a thorough review of it,
okay,
to say the least.
Well, I would hate to think that we would miss a step by not reviewing the official AEW branded booze out there.
Come on, Jeff. We're professionals here. Of course, we're going to review it.
We're professional drinkers at times. Shout out to Dave and Lee of Days of Thunder. So I did see a couple of coming soon's matches that they announced. The TNT Championship is starting next week. In 2 weeks, allegedly, we are having John Moxley versus Jake Hager in an empty arena Falls Count Anywhere match. Which I got some news for you about that whole empty arena thing, guys.
Still happening.
Yeah. But this is a title match. Yeah, it's a title match. So we're gonna get an AEW title match in two episodes of Dynamite. Not necessarily 2 weeks, in two episodes of Dynamite. Mm-hmm. From there we got a video package with the Young Bucks. I was wrapping up my call. This wasn't nothing, was it?
Yeah, no, it was just basically talking about Nick's whole injury angle and how he's still working on getting back to in-ring shape and not being ready just yet. So at the very least, for those who are Young Bucks fans out there who were looking forward to something like this, cool, here's your update on Nick Jackson. He's going to be away for a while longer because kayfabe injury, plus he just got a new kid added onto the family, so be spending time with them. Or as Jericho even called it in the segment beforehand, Hey, congratulations on the new kid. How about you just spend the next year and a half to 2 years on paternity leave and have your idiot brother mow your lawn while at it?
Damn.
Which, yeah.
Well, you know, shots. You know what? Ordinarily I have something snarky to say about the Jacksons and their families because, you know, of their attitudes. But I'll just say congratulations to Nick and the family.
Leave it at that. And then from there, we have our main event for tonight, and
oh God.
Why?
Oh, yeah, once again, why? Holy shit. In a prelude tag match, as we would like to say on the New Japan side of things, a prelude tag match to the TNT title tournament, we get Cody Rhodes and Darby Allin versus Sean Spears and Sammy Guevara. With three of the guys in this match, you might get something workable, but no, you added Sean Spears to this. Jesus Christ.
They have to understand their actions have consequences.
Oh my God. Sean Spears is fucking awful, except for this new gimmick of his. And I think, Chris, I know you're spearheading this effort, but I'm just going to throw it out there. I think maybe this just needs to be his full-time shtick now.
Yeah, degenerate gambler Sean Spears is the most entertaining thing he's done in the past 5 years. By all means, lean all into it. Because it feels like an actual, organic thing involving him in every way, unlike everything else he's tried so far in AEW.
Yeah. I think we can... Yes, I mean, he tried the whole chairman thing and then, did absolutely nothing with it. That the hard way busting open of Cody way back when, what was it? That was June of last year, wasn't it? I think.
Yeah.
June or July?
I'd say May or June, I think, is what it was.
Yeah, and
still, it's just.
They had something there that they could have ridden with and they could have built some momentum, and they fucked it up. And now we get this. we don't even have Tully Blanchard here now to rescue any of this.
Oh God. Sean Spears just, man, that might be the one of the worst signings in wrestling history right there.
Sean Spears sucks the life and joy out of any match he's in.
It's like I've never seen such a black hole it's amazing to me. Like he's not even an offensively bad wrestler or anything. He is perfectly fine, but
he's just there.
Good Lord, man. It's like, why should I care about him? He's the 10 guy.
Right, exactly. Yeah, he's the 10 guy. He's still the 10 guy on Twitter, too.
I know. So it's like, oh, my goodness.
Yeah. Let's face it, Cody Rhodes wasn't exactly making an effort in this either. Darby Allin, of course, you know, was the star of the show. Jesus Christ, scaling that pole to do the coffin drop.
He's a fucking lunatic.
God bless Darby Allin. Even in these times, he's still actually, like, giving an active shit about what he's doing, which...
And credit to Sammy Guevara, too, because, I mean...
Sammy as well, yeah.
He was trying, and also, the fact that he uses that purple glitter just makes him stand out from the entire rest of the roster that we see on a weekly basis. You know, it's not, you know, one of these days we're going to have to talk about, you know, changing the outfits of pro wrestling because all the different shades of black at this point, you know, it gets a little bit samey, you know?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, anyway, I don't have much to say about this match. This match, you know, this was a match that did not need two commercial breaks.
No.
Absolutely not.
I couldn't believe this was a 3-segment match. I'm like, why? Why are they trying to torture me right now?
Well, Lawrence, it's that Metal Gear Solid 5 moment of like, why are we here? Just to suffer.
Yeah, it's just the suffering.
This really is the existentialism episode of this show, isn't it?
yep.
Are we here? What is the nature? What is the point of all this?
It's just why is this tag match main eventing for 3 segments? Like, I just don't understand.
Yeah, why couldn't Kenny versus Trent Barretta
have been the main event? Yeah.
That would have been a great main event. That would have, you know, sent us onto this show happy, you know, but instead, I mean, it was great that they opened it, but boy, did this episode start better than it ended.
Yeah.
Yeah.
At least as a consolation, we have Darby Allin decking Cody for, you know, being a complete self-centered fuck up and not.
That was great.
Yeah, it was great.
Phenomenal.
Back to the wacky world heel face dynamics. When are we going to realize that the Elite are actually the bad guys in this promotion?
Yeah, that's people need to get on that at some point or another, because that is most certainly an aspect right there.
Because Tony Soprano was the lead character of the show doesn't mean he was the hero, folks.
Yeah, it's just like, to me, it's like Cody and Brandy are just like the most obnoxious people. I just can't like them.
Right. Mm-hmm. Well, hey, we talked about that with regard to the Young Bucks and Adam Page too a couple weeks back. Remember?
I know.
Yeah, I think I was the one who unfortunately went as far as going into the comment that Matt and Nick and Kenny are the reason why Adam Page took up drinking the way
he did. They drove him to drinking.
The worst friends you could possibly ask for.
And then Cody is just like the most masturbatory person alive.
Mm-hmm. It's hilarious how even during that, the middle of that match where you had Cody getting beaten up on the heel sides and like Britt Baker taking the deadliest weapon in WCW canon in a woman's shoe and beating him to death with it, which just...
I didn't even think about that.
WCW cosplay is way too much here.
Chris, that was a good one.
Chris. All right, yeah.
Wow, holy crap. Oh, my God. Jesus Christ. Cody really is in too deep here. Yeah. Holy shit.
Well, you know what? At least we got through this episode without shoehorning any Star Trek references in, so.
Oh, brother, yeah.
I mean, believe me, I'm a, you know, long-serving Star Trek fan, but yeah, you don't need to shoehorn a Star Trek reference into everything, guys. You really, really do not.
Let's just keep Colt doing color commentary whenever he's not doing matches. Like,
the way things are going, he might have a long-term gig.
Who else do they have?
Yeah.
Pretty much.
God knows Omega and Cody were not
those
guys.
Oh, please, no. No more. Please. I please, no.
Yeah.
I beg of you, please.
Lawrence is having, like, the, what is it, like, the five stages of grief or whatever it is all happening in this one episode.
Well, you know what? I mean, there's a long-standing tradition of, you know, the guy in charge being a commentator, see also Vince McMahon and Eric Bischoff, but, you know.
It's just, I don't know, man. It's just the Elite love themselves so much. It's just so, oh, it just makes me, my blood boil. They just love themselves so much. It's like,
it's a level of cringe because it's like
disgusting levels of like, oh, we need to be everywhere on the show. Like, I need to be like here. One of them on commentary, and then it's like, Cody does the lame, like, throw the belt to Brandy again. Ooh, look at me.
It's almost like, Lawrence, and I'll say this just because we've reached the bottom of the barrel on TNA references at this point. Remember that one TNA episode where the main event Mafia took over the entirety of it?
It's like that every week.
Exactly.
But it's like, well, they're not the bad guys.
Wait. We want to talk TNA references. I got something. Yeah, the Elite love themselves so much you think that their last name was Jarrett.
Oh, geez. Well, yeah. Wow.
Oh, yeah. Well, I went there. Fuck Jeff Jarrett.
But yeah, no, it's just, yeah, that's a great comparison, Chris. Like, but the thing is, it's every week, and they're like,
exactly. It's not just one episode. It's basically at this, especially now with these dark arena, you know, no fans episodes. Yeah, it's become more and more obvious, and whether that's because, like, a spot of, like, emergency fill-ins and things such, at the same time, it's just, it gets to be, like, a little too, like, get over yourselves kind of thing.
Well, hey, Chris, Generation Me wasn't just a name, it's a way of life.
Generation Me.
Chef, for the love of God.
Oh, my goodness.
On that note, Lawrence, pros and cons.
The opener was really good. Kenny and Trent killed it. I gotta say, it was a very good match. Probably the one thing of the show I really enjoyed. And Lance throwing Marco around like a fucking rag doll. That was great too.
Yes,
that was some fun stuff.
Easily my two favorite like parts of the show, no doubt.
Yeah, those two were the pros for me, plus the Jericho segment. Personally, cons wise, I think, as we mentioned, just the matches that you would have thought would have just been simple squash matches going on maybe a minute or two too long, with offense being way too handily given to people who aren't, you know, the focal point, kind of possibly hurting it a little bit. The main event was just a drag fest outside of very minor spots here and there, which we've already discussed. And just, I don't know, man. It felt like it went better than last week's episode, but not by much.
I will say that last week didn't have, you know, a match of the caliber. Well, I take that back. They did have the Kenny Omega versus Sammy Guevara match for the Mega Campeonato. That was okay. I really actually preferred Omega versus Trent this week, though. Mm-hmm. I thought it was a better match. I thought it was actually more thrilling. And I thought that was, oh, shit, there's a chance Trent might actually win here. You know, so there was a, or, you know, at least take it to time limit draw. So at least there was that. Yeah, Archer and Marco, I thought Marco had got too much offense for what should have been like just a complete demolition, but it was still fun to watch. If I had been able to listen to the Jericho segment, I probably would have liked it better, but, you know, I can't really judge it on that. But yeah, the cons for sure. The main event was just dragged and had no reason to be the main event. I really question the necessity of this TNT championship tournament happening right now with such a limited roster and all the circumstances. And I mean, they're really playing with fire you know, assuming that Double or Nothing is going to happen in the way that they want it to happen, I think, you know?
Yeah, I hear you.
So, with that said, yeah, this show, as I mentioned earlier, this show really started way better than it ended, which is sad. I think if they flip-flopped these two, the first and last matches, we might have had a better opinion of this show overall. So.
Yeah, that's a fair assessment to make.
So, there may be a show next week. There may not. We don't know. We never know until, like, what, Saturday? I think it's usually when they come out and start saying that, yeah, there's going to be a show this week. So, I guess we'll do the plugs real quick. Lawrence.
You can find me at LOB_3 on Twitter. Pure on the Rough just dropped a new episode. We cover the much talked about stare down of the ages between Cass Fujita and Koji Uesugi.
Okay, how long did that stare down actually last?
Oh, actually, like 30 minutes. Like,
yeah, we're not kidding. That was a literal thing that happened.
I mean, save for Fujita shifting to the other corner of the ring once. Then they kept staring at each other.
Is this where I admit that I absolutely fucking loathe Kazuyuki Fujita?
Actually, Fujita was amazing in that match, so don't hate.
Okay, I still fucking hate him. So.
Yeah, you suck, Jeff.
Okay.
Kaz Vegeta rules, so...
Okay, up yours, Lawrence.
Yeah, that's fair enough. But, yeah, we talk about that crazy match. We talk about Kento and Suwama. We talk about just the general coronavirus impact on a lot of these cancellations and Big Japan running their strong climb. And, hey, guess what? Now they can't even finish the strong climb correctly. So,
yeah, I did see that. Did All Japan and NOAH, did they run these empty arena too?
No, All Japan actually had fans.
Oh, God.
DDT had a couple of shows that had fans too. Yeah.
Jesus Christ. Are you kidding me?
The NOAH one, yes. The NOAH one was empty arena. Oh, which made Go and Ken and Kaz Fujita staring at each other even funnier.
Oh, my God.
He also at one point tried to throw Go off a balcony, so that was pretty great. The balcony of Hurricane Hall. It was really amazing stuff, honestly. Yikes. Like, match of the year. But,
Okay, I still hate Kazuyuki Fujita and always have. So, anyway, Chris.
For me, you can find me at either Twitter or Instagram at Brazilian Fury. That's Brazilian with an S instead of a Z. You can find my other podcast, Soundtracks on the Sticks, over on Twitter at Sounds on Sticks. We're part of the Not the Living Geeks Network, which our good friend John Pingle is one of the two co-founders of. We just dropped our third episode a couple of days ago talking about Def Jam Vendetta and what a time 2003 was for myself, Jordan Young, and my mutual friend Corey Thomas as well, just going over kind of what that era of our lives was like and just sort of the craziness of a, you know, pro wrestling game and hip hop combining for kind of like an authentic sort of like hip hop game at that time and kind of the first of its kind up until that point and just how it sort of all developed from there. So fun stuff. Had a fun time going over that.
You can find me at Strong Style Story without the E in style on Twitter. My personal Twitter is at GD Wessel, 2 S's 1 L. And yeah, I have a thing to plug, although it's more of a coming attraction involving the three of us. As I don't know if y'all have noticed, but NJPW World is starting to drop a lot of older matches that may have already been on the service, but they're just putting them on the front page now to, you know, have content during this time. Some of the matches have been redone with new English commentary by Kevin Kelly, but the most important part of this is that because of this, the three of us and possibly a fourth person, I don't have total confirmation yet, but we're actually going to be resurrecting Strong Style History as a special series. We're going to start reviewing some of these matches.
somewhere out there, the guys in the World Cast are probably going, fucking finally, you guys.
Yeah. Yeah, because all we all know that all y'all's here on the Pro Wrestling Only Podcast Network, you love y'all some old graps, so I guess we're going to go back to talking about some old graps. And speaking of the WorldCast, Kelly of the WorldCast has a new show. He's still doing his series on Randy Savage, but he has a new show with Steve Will of the Main Event from Place to Be Nation, if y'all remember that place. They have a new show called International House of Combat, where they're going through historical international wrestling. This debut episode includes Al Hayes versus Guy Robin from France in 1957, and Wayne Bridges versus the Mississippi Mauler from 1981 in England.
Interesting.
So, yeah, maybe I haven't had a chance to listen to that yet, but, yeah, it's Kelly Nelson. It's got to be good. One day the WorldCast will come back, and I'll be so happy to get my fix of 83 and 84 World Class here on the feed. So, anyway, so stay tuned. I think by at least before we drop the next Boom Goes the Dynamite, we should have the resurrection of Strong Style History getting posted.
So, yeah, for sure. Yeah, ideally we should be there as well. And of course, while we're plugging other stuff on the network side of the fence, the boys at Days of Thunder actually did their first Nitro special called Nights of Nitro,
yeah,
based around Goldberg's WCW title win at the Georgia Dome against Hollywood Hulk Hogan.
Oh,
it was a fantastic episode. Go give it a listen if you haven't done so yet.
Yes, the Knights of Nitro episode. Yes, definitely listen to that. So, Lawrence, Chris, I guess I'll see you guys over the weekend.
Yeah, and, planning on it.
Yep, and until then, we may have... Hopefully we'll have a show next week. We'll see. If not, stay tuned for the resurrection of Strong Style History. So until then, we'll see you. Take care.